This is Under Pressure, a medical podcast. Join us with our host, Glenn Clark, as we dive deeper into various wound care, vascular and hyperbaric medicine treatments, and conditions. Each episode features a different medical professional providing a multidisciplinary approach on ways to properly heal.
Welcome to Under Pressure, a medical podcast. I'm Glenn Clark, and our guest this week is attorney Stephen Kaufman. Mr. Stephen Kaufman is a founding partner of RKW Law Group in Owings Mills, Maryland, where he is the head of the healthcare group. He graduated cum laude from Cornell University Law School in 1985. Mr. Kaufman is a former adjunct professor of law at Stevenson University and frequently lectures both nationally and locally to physicians. Steve, is it okay if I call you Steve? Is that all right?
Yeah, Glenn, it's good.
Well, I appreciate you being here and joining us on this week's episode. If I could, I am learning as you inform me of these things, so we're going to dumb it down for me a little bit, all right? What is an employment agreement for a doctor, really?
Oh, Glenn, an employment agreement for a doctor is not what most people think it is.
Okay.
A lot of people think of an employment agreement as the be end and end all. You get the piece of paper, that's it. But it's not really true. What's really going on is you strike a business deal.
Okay.
And when you strike the business deal, then you need to write down what the real deal is. So what an employment agreement really is, it governs your rights and obligations to your employer and your employer's rights and obligation as to you. But what it really talks about is what time you get up in the morning. And what time you go to bed at night, and what you do on your weekends, and how much money you're going to make this year, next year, years to come. And if you get fired from your job, where you can work on your next job, right? Because you're going to have a non-compete in there. Maybe you're going to have to move out of your community. And sometimes they even talk about what happens to some of your money if you die. So it's, you know, people think of it as a piece of paper, sometimes unimportant, but it's a really, really important piece of paper.
This is all encompassing, my friend. This seems to cover everything.
It's a good employment contract. It'll govern your hours, how much money you make, how you get fired, and a non-compete, where you can work on your next job. Those are the four main parts of every employment agreement all across the United States. I've done about 5,000 employment agreements at this point in my career. Every specialty you can imagine, every kind of employer, from solos in the middle of the backwoods in Kentucky to huge hospital systems. It's these same things repeat themselves over and over and over and over again.
So let's cover that. All of these employment agreements that you've been a part of, I am sure that you have seen a number of mistakes that doctors make in employment agreements over the years. Can you point out maybe three of the biggest mistakes that you have seen when it comes to these employment agreements?
Sure. The three biggest mistakes, we'll do them one by one.
All right.
The first one is doctors are all very, very smart. That's a given. I'm married to a doctor. My wife's a pediatrician.
I'd like to hope they are.
You know, no, they are. And look, my wife's smarter than me. You don't get into medical school and out of medical school without being really smart. So they're all really smart. But what they forget is they went to medical school. Mm. And the biggest mistake I see people make is they don't understand that the contracts aren't in English. They think they're in English, and because they're really smart, they assume they can take care of it themselves, but they went to the wrong school.
And that's because they're in legalese?
It's partly because they're in legalese. You go to law school. You know, I went to law school for 3 years to learn how to speak like a lawyer. They went to medical school for 4 years to learn how to talk like doctors. It's different language.
Yep.
And that's a definite problem. And then there's the problem of there isn't enough experience often to understand what the words really mean on the page. So, for example, you'll have a doctor who has to be on call, and the call will be shared equitably among all doctors. And a lot of doctors think that means equally.
Yes, that's what it sounds like to me, and I didn't even go to medical school.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you needed to go to law school, right? But the difference between equitable and equal is if there's six people, you're on call one and six. If it's equitable, Yeah, it's what the boss thinks is fair.
Oh.
And I've been practicing 30 years. Glenn, you've been practicing for 10 minutes. You can have twice as much call as me because I've been doing it for 30 years. That's fair.
Mm-hmm. So, I've earned that, right?
Exactly.
That's equitable. Yes.
It's exactly right. It's not fair. And you'll see that employees will make that mistake, but I'll see employers make the same mistake. They'll get an agreement that they used 10 years ago, 20 years ago. It was the one they had. Some lawyer did it for them, and they've been modifying it through the years. And I have yet to meet a doctor that truly understands their own employment agreement. And I can see when they modify it themselves. And frankly, I'm kind of happy when they do because
it ends up being good news for you.
Yeah, I make more money. Yeah, exactly.
Correct. They're going to need you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, fixing a contract up front, relatively inexpensive, easy to do.
Yep.
Fixing it at the back end after a fight has started.
Going to take a few more billable hours involved.
Yeah, exactly. More aggravation for the doctors, more cost for the doctors, more time consuming, all good for me. So we try and fix that up front.
So that's the first one.
That's the first one.
Yep.
It's not really in English. The second one is kind of a failure, and this is usually the failure of the employee. It's a failure to recognize the role of lawyers. So the contracts are written to benefit the employer. The employer always gives the employee the contracts, never the other way around. And they're always written to protect the employer. They're not designed to set out the business deal that was cut. Never.
What do you mean by that?
Well, okay, I've done this 5,000 times.
Okay.
You're a doctor. You're told that you're going to work Mondays through Thursdays seeing patients, and you're going to get a half a day administrative time. So that's your schedule. 4.5 days of clinical and a half a day of administrative time to do your charting, return your phone calls, whatever you have to do. Your contract's going to come in and it's going to say that you will work a minimum of 40 hours a week on a schedule set by the employer.
Okay.
Which is what, 100 hours a week?
Right.
Monday through Friday, Saturday, Sundays, nights, weekends. What is that exactly?
It's undefined is what it sounds like.
It is extraordinarily open-ended because the employer wants to retain flexibility.
Yep.
Right? And what people don't realize, a lot of doctors are afraid of lawyers. You start there. I mean, they're kind of trained to be afraid of lawyers. I have a lot of doctors who are friends. You go to a party, you stick out your hand, nice to meet you. What do you do for a living, Steve? And I say, I'm a lawyer, and they take a step backwards.
Mm-hmm. In fairness. Right.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's unreasonable. But you say, whoa, wait, I represent doctors. It's okay. I'm safe. And what a lot of doctors don't recognize is that lawyers have a fiduciary duty to clients. And what that means is that, Glenn, when you're my client, I have to look out for you above all else.
That's right? Your responsibility.
Exactly. Yes. You're number one for me. Well, if I'm representing the employer's number one for me.
Whatever's in their best interests.
You bet. And so when I have to worry about things changing, if I'm representing the employer, maybe somebody quits. I need somebody to work harder. Pandemic hits. I need to lay people off. I need to cut pay. So I want to create a contract that's really flexible and good for the employer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you put in things that are really bad for the employer that are really good for the employer. Like, hey, if I get in a lawsuit with you, you have to pay my legal bills.
Yeah. That behooves you. Yes. Sure. 100%.
Right? So I'm trying to load up the contract to benefit my client and still sort of set out the deal. And people don't realize that that's happening to them, particularly when employers like to say that their contracts are standard. I don't know what kind of contract you have, Glenn, but I will bet you when your employer handed it to you, they said, hey, Glenn, trust us.
Yep, standard contract,
yeah,
100%.
Right. So which brings me to kind of the third rule, which is – there's the third thing people do wrong the most is they fail to recognize there's no such thing as standard.
Interesting.
It doesn't exist. It's not. There's no national. There's no local. Hospital systems will say to you, oh, this contract is standard. It can't be changed.
Is that because everything is different given the circumstances? Is that
Well, it's not true.
Right.
Start there.
Right.
Right. And what hospitals in particular are trying to do it, because if you've got 2,000 doctors, it's just easier for you if they're all the same.
Sure. Exactly right.
But the reality is this year's standard is next year's old contract.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different from last year. I have 30 years of contracts from hospital systems. They change them all the time. And what the mistake that people make, that doctors make all the time, is they believe this idea that there's something called standard. It doesn't exist. And as a result, they fail to negotiate. And you've got to negotiate. You have to negotiate. And there's three reasons to negotiate.
Okay.
Three great reasons. The one is the obvious one.
There's a term. It's not a medical term necessarily. It's one that I use in my business. It's so you don't get, quote unquote, screwed is the term that we like to use.
Yeah,
but again, I want to make that very clear. Not a medical term.
Yeah, no, that's actually a technical legal term.
Right, exactly right.
Yeah, I'm accused of doing that to people all the time. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yes.
So there's three. Yeah, you never want to get screwed,
yep.
Right? You want to go through the contract to make sure there's nothing in it that's terrible for you, that it doesn't. You don't have to pay their legal fees.
Yep.
If they get sued, you don't have to cover their bills, whatever. You want to get rid of all that bad stuff.
You're saying that can't be standard.
Well,
they might try to.
Yeah. They tell you they can't change it. What they mean is they don't want to.
Exactly.
Right? And you'll find, too, when somebody tells you no, they don't really mean no often. They just mean, gee, I hope no makes them go away.
Exactly.
Right? If I had a nickel for every time you were told, a doctor was told, sorry, can't change that, and then I followed up by calling the lawyer, and the lawyer has no idea they were told it can't be changed, and I get it fixed.
Yep.
Because they know you're right.
Yep.
Right? So when you look at the contracts and you look to negotiate, there's three reasons to negotiate. One is the one you implied, which is you get more stuff.
Yep.
Right? I'll get more money. You'll have a smaller non-compete. You're harder to fire. Maybe I say your hours are actually Monday through Thursday.
Yeah, a little more defined
Saturday,
than open whenever we say so.
Yeah, right? Yeah. We take that 30-mile non-compete for a hospitalist and we knock it down to zero because hospitalists can't steal patients. So why do we have a non-compete? The employer says they can fire you if you fail to follow their rules and regulations.
It's pretty open-ended.
Yeah, right? Real easy to fire somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
So you change it. You say, listen, if I violate your rules and your regulations, give me written notice of what I did wrong and a fair chance to fix it. And you're still going to get fired, but it gives me time to negotiate a graceful out so you don't get fired.
Yep.
So you'll get more stuff. You'll get more money. You'll fix your contract. You'll get more vacation. But the second reason to negotiate is you'll learn more about the job. Because remember, you've got this mismatch between what you're told and what the paper says.
Got it.
Right? So you're told you're going to work on the north side of town.
Yeah.
Right? They got 10 offices.
Yep.
Contract comes in, says you're going to work on the north side and such other places they might assign you. No good. So you go back and you say, hey, make it say north side and places I agree to.
Yep.
You got to ask me.
Yep.
And then they say no. And you ask them why. And you get another technical business term. You get bullshit. But you keep pushing till eventually they say to you, either we're not going to change it. Now you got to really wonder what's going on here.
Right.
Do I really want this job? Is it safe? Or, like I've had this happen, they admit to you, look, we've got somebody leaving the office on the south side of town and we think you're a good fit and we're going to want to move you over there. And then you can pass on the job while you still have other opportunities.
That's a great point.
Right? You got to ask, or you don't learn about what's really going on.
Let's get to the bottom of it.
Let's
get to the bottom of what the reality is of this, and I can make a decision from there.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. You've just absolutely got to do that. And the final reason to negotiate, which sometimes is the most important, is you find out the character of your employer. Because negotiation, particularly over money, reveals character.
Hmm.
And a lot of times what will happen is they'll bully you or they'll patronize you. You'll get patted on the head. And imagine what happens after you take the job if they bully you or patronize you when they should be on their best behavior beforehand.
Give me some serious situations that you're dealing with.
Oh, yeah.
Right, correct.
Right? Right. So from an employee standpoint, you want to understand what you're getting. I mean, I've had employers tell me, I've had big hospital systems tell me, listen, tell them take it or leave it. We'll take the next one in line. If she doesn't want the job, we'll just take the next one. Who wants to hear that? Even if all you're told is, look, we love you, but we can't make these changes you want. We hear you. We understand your problems. We think you'd be a fabulous fit. We don't have any more money for you. Please, we hope you come anyway. They still didn't make any changes. And look at the difference in attitude between the two. I had tell you a story.
Okay.
This is the most egregious case of patronizing I've ever run into.
Okay.
And it's about 6 months old. I've got a female physician who's given a contract, and she sends back an email to the prospective boss. And it spells out her concerns with the contract, changes she'd like to make, a discussion, things she wants to talk about to iron out before she signs. And it's a professionally done, very reasonable email. And I know this because I ghostwrote it for her.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know we're on good ground here, okay?
Yeah.
And here's what comes back. Verbatim, here's what comes back from the male boss to my female doctor. You're so cute.
Jesus.
Really, you're so cute. Don't worry about this stuff. It'll be okay. You... Right? Yeah, your reaction is right. You can't run.
I just face palm for those of you that are listening that can't see that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You can't run away from that fast enough. If you don't negotiate, you find that out after you've taken the job,
yep.
You've given up, and you're stuck.
Yep.
Got to negotiate.
No doubt. Need to know that.
And so those are the big three that people don't appreciate that it's not in English. They don't recognize that the other lawyer is looking out
for them.
For them, yep. Totally. They're not setting out the deal that was cut. And most importantly, they fall for the idea that it's all standard. And even from an employer's standpoint, I think you should be negotiating. Telling people it's all standard loses the ability to find out whether the employee has any skills. Maybe they're going to come in like a bunch of egotistical, you know, give me everything entitled brats. You want to find that out before you start work, too.
No question.
So from both sides, I think negotiation is important. Whether there's changes made or not, negotiation is important.
Steve, I'd like to touch on two things quickly before we wrap up. One, you referenced the pandemic in there. Have there been significant changes to contracts because of the pandemic?
The biggest change I've seen because of pandemic is employers are putting in act of God provisions.
Okay.
And it basically what it says is if we have a hurricane and a fire or, hey, the government shuts us down mm-hmm. because of the pandemic, we can fire you, cut your pay, lay you off, giving them the flexibility to not have to keep paying people under contract. When the pandemic first hit, I was getting calls from doctors all over the country who were – remember, the pandemic hit in March and jobs generally start in July. And people were being told, never mind, we don't want you to start. And they were being paid off. They were being bought out of their contracts before they even started. So to avoid that happening again, employers are trying to, again, retain more flexibility. That's really the biggest change I'm seeing.
And then we'd like to ask this question of everybody that comes and visits with us. Is there anything that you learned going back to law school that you would say you still do or follow or believe or has stayed with you to this day?
I would say that's a great question, which is a nice stall tactic.
Sure, yes. I use plenty of these in my career, I promise you.
I think there's probably three things that I learned in law school that I didn't understand that I had learned and were useful until I'd been practiced for a long time. Because remember, law school, a lot of people are under the illusion, non-lawyers are under the illusion that you go to law school to learn the law.
Right.
But it turns out you don't.
Okay.
Because the law changes all
You're
the time.
You're constantly learning the law. Right.
Yeah, it changes all the time. And I went to a national law school. We were from all 50 states and a bunch of foreign countries. Whose law were they going to teach us anyway? So it's not what you're in law school for, but when you're a law student, you don't always realize it. And I didn't realize it for years later.
Yep.
And I think what I really learned And some specific thanks to some specific professors for this. But I think I learned to read like a lawyer,
okay.
Which we kind of talked about how important it is, right?
Yep.
Money swings on commas and particular words. And non-lawyers don't appreciate how closely lawyers write and read. Mm-hmm. I think I learned, and I'm going to give a shout out. I don't even know if he's alive anymore, but I'm going to give a shout out to Robert Summers, who is a relatively famous contract professor, wrote the book with a Harvard professor. And I don't know if he's around anymore, but thank you, Bob Summers.
Wow.
I hated you when I was in your class, but you taught me to stand up to authority.
It's great.
You know, every day I have to stand up on behalf of other people and get what they want. And he was a terrible pain. But what I came to realize years later is he was teaching me to tell him that he was full of it.
Wow.
And
it's important. That's important. Yep.
It's what I do, right? Yep. I mean, I'm paid to stand up for people to help them solve their problems. And the third thing I learned I didn't fully appreciate until I was really in practice for a while was that the importance of listening to people. It isn't any different than a doctor who has to listen to the patient. The patient knows themselves the best, or maybe the patient knows their kid the best if you're in pediatrics or something like that. You have to listen. If I don't truly listen to what's concerning them, what they're hoping to solve, what their real problem is, I've got no chance of fixing their problem. And what I've learned over time is that my job as a lawyer is really to as efficiently and quickly fix your problems as I can. And if I don't listen to you really carefully,
it's going to be tough to do that.
Exactly.
No question. No question. I have really enjoyed listening to you, Stephen Kaufman. This has been delightful.
Well, thank you, Glenn. It's been a pleasure being here.
Thank you for joining us here on Under Pressure, a medical podcast. The information stated on the podcast is for educational purposes only and does not substitute for professional medical advice. We strongly recommend consulting a medical professional or healthcare provider if you are seeking medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.